Welcome to Yacht Crew Vlogs, where we tell the stories of those in the yachting industry. A behind-the-scenes look that discovers the individuals in the industry, their history, their passions, and what inspires them to do what they do. Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Yacht Crew Vlogs right here on Yachting International Radio. My name is Rhea. I am your host, and I'm very pleased to welcome my next two guests. They are the hosts of a podcast right now called Luxury News Weekly, and we are going to be bringing that podcast to you weekly right here at Yachting International Radio. Welcome to Elizabeth Solaru and Simba Wakatama. Welcome.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you for having us.
Yeah, well, you know what? I've got to say, this is really multinational because we have Simba, who is in Toronto. We have Elizabeth, who is in London. And then myself in Palma. But, you know, neither one of you come from where you are right now, as the same as me. I don't come from Palma either. So we're all sort of children of the universe, I think. Let's start with you, Simba. Where were you born, raised, and give us a sort of a brief history of what brought you to Canada?
Yeah, so my family always traveled a lot, and my parents grew up living around the world. I was born in Zimbabwe, and I was raised there as well. I lived in South Africa for a couple of years in between there, and then I moved to Canada with my family about 13 years ago. So I'm very much Canadian, and as well, well, let's say Torontonian, and a mix. I'm like an African Torontonian mix. So yeah, that's kind of my brief background. So now I live in Toronto.
And what is it that you do? What is your business? What is sort of your education? What brings you to luxury?
Yeah, so I kind of stumbled into luxury, not because I wanted to be in luxury per se, although I kind of grew up with luxuries around me, you know, the brand names, the lifestyle. It's very, I guess, not Canadian. The Canadian lifestyle is more simple, I would say, but the African lifestyle is quite luxurious, actually. It's very luxurious, and that's kind of more of the norm. I didn't think it was luxury. I thought it was normal. And when I moved to Canada, I kind of got into the business of luxury because I wanted to make products that I didn't see reflected in the marketplace. I wanted to make products that weren't only beautiful and made with high quality materials, but that actually worked well. Because my background is in engineering, I wanted things that actually worked well. So with my current company, Volo Bespoke, we personalize jewelry storage for people's jewelry, for people's high-end jewelry or the jewelry they wear. And I'm not talking about jewelry boxes, which, again, is an example of something that doesn't do anything well because it tries to do everything. We make beautiful stands, beautiful displays for the home catered specifically to certain kinds of jewelry and matching a certain clientele's like aesthetic. So that's what I do. And as I also consult because I have a background in social media and rapid prototyping. So like right now I'm actually at Ryerson University. I'm in the university campus right now in a maker space there. I'm 3D printing some stuff. So yeah, that's kind of the overarching thing that I do. So that's the context I bring into Luxury News Weekly.
Interesting. Well, Elizabeth, what about you? Where are you from originally and what got you to London and what brought you into the luxury space? You have quite a story yourself.
Yeah, my dad came to the UK to study in the 60s and my mother joined him and they had three of us. So we were all, you know, my brother and sister and I were all born in London. And my father had a relatively great job. He was an engineer. He was a qualified engineer. And he worked for the city council, which is Westminster. And he looked after big projects. So bridges, for example, government houses, etc. but he wanted to go back to his home country, which was Nigeria, to help rebuild the country after independence. So he went back to Nigeria. He took us with him, and we stayed there for quite a number of years. And then my brother, sister, and I, we came back over to the UK after we got our degrees. So again, growing up in an African family, it's all about education, education, education. So it's not unusual to have about 3 degrees or whatever. I have several degrees myself. I think about 5 degrees and qualifications, including an MBA. My first degree was in microbiology, and then I did a master's in medical microbiology and parasitology. And then I worked in a hospital as a scientist for several years. And again, didn't really think very much of the luxury world because, as Simba said, we are, as Africans, of a certain education or a certain family background or whatever, you are used to having luxury around. And then obviously came back to the UK as a poor, penniless student, and again, worked as a scientist, and then left because I kind of felt I didn't want to be a lab rat for the rest of my life. So I then did a couple of other jobs. I became a headhunter in the city. And after that, I got to a milestone birthday, and I thought, if I don't do what I wanted to now, I'll never do it. So I became a cake maker, which sounds strange. And of course, you know, my African parents were a bit baffled. And that's an understatement, by the way. They were probably so disappointed, but they were baffled as to why I'd want to give up a steady, respectable career. But I started making cakes, and before you know it, I was making cakes for some of the best luxury clients out there, from royalty, being flown all over the world, that sort of thing. And then, things just took off from there. So right now, I am still a cake maker, although I choose my projects, but I do mainly luxury consulting. I do mainly coaching, mentoring, etc. So that's me in a nutshell.
It's amazing. You know, the one thing that we've had conversations prior for the audience out there, just to hear the history of the stories, and we've obviously sort of gone into it in further detail. But to hear the story of, you know, the massive education and the massive experience and the world traveling and, you know, just, yes, you lived around luxury, but you had, you know, so much other, your fingers in so many different pies. And then to look at what you're doing now. And I have to say, we're going to definitely include all the links below this interview when it airs so that people can actually see what it is that you guys do. Because then I went to your websites and I saw what you have to offer. And I thought, wow, like, you know, to go from a lab rat, as you call yourself, Elizabeth, to making, you know, works of art out of cake. And the same with you, Sam, but what you're doing, it is phenomenal. And so it's really interesting to see. And what caught my eye, I think, is seeing your podcast on LinkedIn. And there's something different about that. Simba, tell me, what is it? How did you come about bringing this format into your podcast after seeing what everybody else had to offer out there when they were talking about luxury and creating podcasts in regards to luxury?
You know, it's quite simple. I feel now like every story, whenever someone asks, why did you do this? I just wanted it, looked for it, couldn't find it, did it myself. So in the case of luxury, this is, let's take a trip down memory lane for a second. So there was an app. No one knew what it was about. It was hyped up. It was called Clubhouse.
And I think people have forgotten by now too, right?
Right? And, you know, it was so funny because one of my friends got an invite directly from the founders. So I got really early access, and I had just got an iPhone. I was Android to the death of me. And I just got an iPhone, and it was invite only, iPhone only at the time. So I get this invite and I'm like, well, let me check it out. And it was crazy the amount of celebrities that were on this platform. You can just talk to executives, venture capitalists. I met so many outstanding people, the top of their class, all around the world. Monaco, London, you know, all parts of Europe, America, Africa. But, you know, I said, this is great. These are such high-level people, but we're having very shallow conversations. You know, and I said, well, right now I can talk to someone who actually influences the luxury market, let's say, and I can ask them their opinion, but no one's really, I was hoping someone would just facilitate that and get really big people onto their platform. No one really did. So it first started with jewelry. I created a jewelry community and it grew large until I was pushed out of it. You know, it was too big for me and it wasn't exactly what I wanted. It was only halfway there. But we ended up having one of the largest jewelry rooms, if not the largest jewelry room on Clubhouse. And I started that. But then I said, you know what? This is almost what we want. I want to talk about luxury. I want to talk about making things, the process, the business, the stories, all that. And I just started a random room and some people came in. I said, oh, this could work. We could probably do this often. I met Elizabeth on Clubhouse and I kind of pitched it to her that, hey, you know, maybe we should do this weekly, you know, talk about the luxury stories. It's like, let's do it Sunday. Let's do it. And we did it. And the rest is history. We didn't stop. This was like 6 months ago.
Well, I got to say, it's entertaining too. You know, it's not just one topic and it goes on and on and on and you're like starting to snooze off. It's like snippets of really interesting information, sort of a quick story about it, and then you move on. And it captures your attention and it pulls the listener in. And I really, you know, any listener out there will know that I am the last person that is into luxury at all. I own two pairs of shoes. That should say enough. But I actually found it interesting. So, and that shocked me. If a person like myself could find that interesting, then those that truly are interested in luxury and interested in what the market has to offer, I mean, they're going to be transfixed.
And I'm so happy you mentioned that because, you know, we didn't want to make something for just people who are already luxury fanatics. We wanted to make something that could educate someone who doesn't know much about luxury, give them the confidence, and then they'll really see that this thing we call luxury and we put aside is actually, we're talking about just good products made well. And yes, they're expensive, but that's your, you know, we spend money on things all the time. But at least now, you know, this is the story. This is good. We mention when things are bad, too. We are very clear if something is not worth your time. Yeah. And all the interesting stories surrounding the luxury world as it is.
Yeah, see, that's the one thing that I do enjoy as well, is that you're not, like, you don't pull any punches either. Like, both of you, Elizabeth, you as well. I mean, you're very upfront. You're very honest. You tell the story the way it is. It's not like you're trying to kiss ass, you know, that's not the, you know, you are actually stating facts and you know what you're talking about. You're not just,
oh, absolutely. I think this is what I personally noticed in the market. Most books about luxury are written by professors of luxury, and that's not a bad thing. But the problem is they tend to be boring, you know, for lack of a better word, and they're not based in real life. Now, I've looked after what many would consider to be high-end, really, really high-end, ultra-high net worth clients and individuals. I've also looked after people who are not so rich in money. However, the one thing everyone has in common is value. We want value for money. We want to be made to feel special. And another thing that we kind of noticed, Simba and I, is that there are different kinds of luxury brands, obviously. However, just because somebody is a legacy brand, so the really famous brand that, you know, I don't want to mention big names, but the big name brands, let's say, who are legacy brands, they don't have much more right over, say, a newer brand that is giving value. So even if you're a big brand and you are not giving value and people are complaining about your customer service or something is not quite right, we think it's only fair that that is brought to your attention. Because nowadays, it's easy for a brand, no matter how big you are, it's easy for you to get cancelled. Because in the old days, there was a shroud of mystery around certain brands. But now there's what we call the democratization of luxury. So luxury is now kind of fairly democratic. And if you claim to be socially responsible, if you claim to be into sustainability, for example, the Gen Zs, the Alphas and the Millennials, they will find you out. They will research you. And the moment they find that you're not being authentic or you're not what you're portraying, they will call you out and you will get cancelled. So we believe that Luxury News Weekly is about the business side of things, but it's also about the fun side of things and some of the process. Because at the end of the day, you want to deliver an amazing product or service that clients absolutely deserve. So that's what's at the foundation of everything that we do on Luxury News Weekly.
And do you think that you've seen a change, a shift? I mean, you know, as you said, yes, the new generation is coming up. They are holding people accountable. Do you find that these luxury brands are marketing themselves differently? Have they shifted or are they still stuck in you know, the 1800s in some of their marketing tactics? Or are the ones that are stuck in their marketing tactics in the 1800s going out of business as a result?
Some are moving beautifully with the times. Some are, for example, we've had, we were talking about it recently, we had Fendi and Versace collaborating, designing together. That's never happened ever in the history of Italian fashion houses. We've had a recent hacker project with Gucci and Balenciaga. So you've got two big fashion houses who are seemingly competitors and rivals in the same space coming together and collaborating. So it's what I call co-opetition, for lack of a better word, co-opetition, because they've realized that, especially with the pandemic speeding technology up by about 5 years, they've realized it's a different marketplace. People want something different. It's let's swim together or we sink alone type of situation. So they're more likely to collaborate. And what we're finding now is that a lot of them are beginning to appreciate the value of their online presence and technology that drives the online. So many of them, and we spoke about it, I think, in this week's podcast, where they are actually splitting their brick and mortar stores away from their online presence. Also, another thing we've noticed is that they're beginning to treat certain markets with a lot more respect. So in the past, you know, they'll say, oh, let's go to China and not think about it too much. But now they're very reverential about the Chinese market. They're quite respectable about the Middle Eastern and African market, because now they're realizing people in those countries enjoy luxury, want luxury. However, they need to be treated with respect. So those are some of the things that we've observed.
Simba, have you noticed that luxury brands are really taking into account the fact that the ultra high net worth individual is changing? Diversity is important. Equality is important. Do you notice, you know, one of the biggest things I think in yachting anyways, is that in marketing, images are, you know, when you see a yacht charter, it's images of, you know, 12-year-old blondes and bikinis and, you know, middle-aged white guys, and you don't see a lot of anything else. Are you noticing that luxury brands are shifting away from those type of images as well, and actually taking a look at the research of the marketplace and realizing that, you know, in order to touch the new ultra high net worth individual, they have to be more inclusive?
Yes, actually. So I'm happy you mentioned that, because what they're realizing, the ones that are doing well, is that luxury, the luxury consumer is not only changing, it's growing and it's getting younger. So it's more of a, it's kind of two problems at once. It's the culture of luxury is changing. And then the access to capital on planet Earth is changing. So now you've got kids that are able to actually make purchasing decisions with their parents' money without consulting their parents. So they are as rich as their parents, if you put it that way, right? Because they are making the purchasing decision. And you see a lot of brands kind of lean into the digital space to capture that younger market. And in the digital space, you can't afford to be kind of like they say, the old luxury tropes of the old gray hair, you know, white dude. On the internet, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
People identify with themselves on the internet, with their tribe on the internet. So, but they also have the technology to target their audiences based on separate ads. So you'll see, and this is where a company like Dolce & Gabbana gets in trouble because they do it wrong, but you know, a lot of companies do it right. They'll use Chinese icons for the Chinese market, African icons for the African market. And then they'll even they'll divide it into subsections. For the hype beasts, they'll use someone who's big in that realm. For the music lovers, they'll use someone who's big in that realm. You've got Tiffany & Co. using Jay-Z and Beyonce to say it's not your mother's jewelry, but we're still, you know, we still believe in legacy. So you see this happening, but it's so much more complex. And what we showed through the Luxury News Weekly is that we are the voice of that new luxury consumer. And everyone is starting to notice that, but they just don't know what it is. They say, oh, your podcast is different. I don't know what it is. What it is that we are the luxury consumer and the luxury creator, reflecting the new world, if you will. And that's really, I think, the main difference between our podcast and what's already out there. But we're just a reflection of what's happening. We're not trying to, it's not all that innovative, is it, right? Like, yeah, so, but yes, it is changing and they are moving or they're dying. That's just how it is.
Yeah, it was really interesting to see because, you know, when you talk about luxury, yachting sort of falls into that category guaranteed as well, right? You have to be part of the ultra high net worth individual marketplace in order to own a yacht, even charter a yacht for that matter. I think there are certain segments of that population, though, that really are stuck in like 1980. You know, they really don't see that the future is changing. If you want to be in business in 5 years from now, then you got to change. Because if you continue to market your product the way it is, and I see this in yachting, if they continue to market their product the way they are, they're not going to have a business in 5 or 10 years. I mean, yes, there's always going to be people buying yachts. Yes, there's always going to be people chartering yachts. But they're going to be going to those companies that they can relate to.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Simba, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just agreeing because what's happening now, I think, is people are not just buying products anymore because all the products, everyone can kind of make the same quality product on average. So the real differentiator now is brand. And there's a very small, like the line between a brand and a person is so blurred. That's why you have influencers becoming brands. Are they a person? Are they a celebrity or are they a brand? Well, the answer is they're all three, right? Because that now we ask brands to make political decisions. Those are personal. That used to be personal, right? You know, like church and state. We expect brands to make very political and personal statements as if they are people, right? And this is new. People don't know how to navigate this very well yet. And so you see a lot of turbulence. But because of that, you're absolutely right. The people that don't change will lose customers just automatically because they're going to see a brand as a friend, a brand as an advisor, a brand as, you know, someone, a mentor. And if they don't, if they just see you as a product, you're dead.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I personally think that the days of people claiming that the reason they don't market to a certain segment of the population is because there's a lack of images, I think that is, that's copping out, because that just is not true. It just is not true in today's day and age. And anybody that says it is, they're blind.
Oh, absolutely. And also, I think in the yachting world, they need to realize that, as Simba rightly said, if the demographic is getting younger, we need to ask ourselves why the demographic is getting younger. And that's because the barrier to entry when it comes to money is actually getting lower. And what do I mean by that? You can have a gamer, a 14-year-old gamer, go on to win an international competition, and they can win millions in prize money. They can win millions in sponsorship. So also you can have a 17-year-old create an NFT and sell it for millions. Again, with the right marketing, right positioning, the right tribe behind him, he can market and sell his NFT for millions. Yeah. So that means if the barrier to entry for yachting was money, that's getting lowered and lowered. And what's also happening is that the young people, because of the uncertainty of climate change, the planet, etc., they are now putting roots on experience as opposed to buying real estate. Yes, real estate is still booming. However, many people want to enjoy their money. They want to go out and experience things. They want to take that, you know, that balloon ride to the moon. They want to do things that are unusual. So I think, you know, the yachting world needs to take note of that, because as the customer base is changing, they need to change with it. Gone are the days where you've got, you know, people who are interested in yachts go to a yacht show. A yacht show might not interest a young person. Indeed, we see certain brands, and we've spoken about these brands, certain brands are now taking their brands into the gaming world. They're taking their brands into the metaverse. So they would say to a child of 9, 10, you know, buy a Gucci belt for your character for $5. So what they're doing is introducing the younger generation to that brand. So they're not waiting for the youngsters to come to them. They are going actively seeking and going to the youngsters. So I believe that's another change that maybe the yachting world needs to take cognizance of.
Well, and see, that's what I always say. You know, you've got to take it to them now. You can't expect anybody to come to you anymore, because there are so many options. So, you know, when you have a business and whatever your product is, you've got to make sure that you're in front of your client wherever they may be, whether they're an Instagram user, whether they're on Twitter, whether they're on YouTube, whether they're on Facebook. And, you know, a lot of these people are on different social media forums, TikTok, et cetera, and specifically only there. They're not interested in any other. So if you are, oh, I'm just going to stay with the safe three, you know, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram, you could be missing out on an entire generation. TikTok, for example, is, you know, the group that you've been just talking about, 17, 16, 15, and now is coming up a bit. But, you know, you have to be everywhere in order to reach the new generation, because, you know, if you're not everywhere, then you're going to miss a whole segment of your potential customer.
TikTok, for example, I'm beginning to see there's a luxury TikTok. So whenever I go on TikTok, the algorithm has been fantastic at recognizing what people are very interested in, because it goes according to what Simba said, they niche within the niche. So even within luxury TikTok, they'll show you real estate, cars. There's a young guy, I can't remember his name. He goes up to people in fancy cars, asking them, what do they do for a living? He's very popular on TikTok. There's another guy that knocks on people's doors on their massive estates, asking them, what do you do for a living? So there is that generation coming up, and there's no fear in terms of attainability. For many of them, they know if they grow their brand, be it personal, be it whatever brand, if they grow it long enough on TikTok to become a massive creator and have a massive following, they know they can make the money. So luxury needs to be very aware of the changing demographic.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is marketing 101, Coca-Cola and you know, Pepsi and all those Starbucks, et cetera. They started hitting their clientele when they were 2 years old, you know,
yeah.
In the Disney movies, you'd see the Coca-Cola logo. You drive down the highway or the, you know, a massive highway in the middle of New York City and you see the Coca-Cola billboard. You know, they targeted everyone. And so, you know, when you get thirsty and you walk by a store, the first thing you think is I'm going to grab a Coke. Or a Pepsi or whatever that may, well, you know, you need a shot of coffee. Well, Starbucks, I mean, it's just constantly embedding your brand over and over and over and over again. And I don't think a lot of people, I don't know where that got lost somewhere. You know, it did definitely get lost somewhere, the old school style marketing, but in a new format, at least I think so. You know, I mean, that's what you're doing with TikTok. That's what you're doing with Instagram. You're constantly, you know, sometimes people might not even, we're talking about an immediate generation now. So you've got a few seconds to catch their attention. And that means they want to see your logo. And that might be all they get. So you better make sure they see your logo.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, that's kind of my generation and younger. I'm the YOLO generation. I'm a millennial. We are just, you only live once. Forget all this nonsense. Go have a good time, all right? We're all going to die anyways. That's my generation. And then the ones below us, they've just had it so easy. They don't care about anything. But I will say we are a little bit of a transitional generation as well, where we've seen a bit of the old school, seen a bit of the new school. And to be quite honest, we just hate ads. We just hate ads with a passion. That's why we only like getting advertised to by people we trust, aka influencers or, you know, blogs that you respect and podcasts you listen to. So the advertising is more subtle and it has to be genuine, right? Coca-Cola, like for instance, with the Coca-Cola situation, we know that Coca-Cola doesn't care about any of us because they advertise for all of us.
Yeah.
Right. But the brands that are really good at advertising make you feel like they care about you.
Yeah.
Right. And that they're ignoring others to care for you. And that's pretty much luxury in a nutshell. It's I am putting you in front of me above all. I just want to make sure you're happy with what you get. Right. And that's, you know, that's the big differentiator. Yeah, at least in my opinion. And young people hate the idea of luxury, but we absolutely love expensive and nice and flashy things. It's a weird, we just don't want it to be labeled as luxury. That's why you see brands saying, oh, well, sustainable now, or, yeah. You know, cost per use now, different ways of selling you the same thing.
Yeah, well, you know, it'll be interesting to see how things sort of change in the near future and what we're going to see, because gone are the days where, you know, the marketplace changed slowly, you know, 5 years, 10 years, you would see a slow, gradual change. Things are changing like in months now. It's not a long period of time. It's very fast. It's quick moving. And that makes it difficult for people. You know, you always have to be on the leading edge, especially if you're in your marketing, and especially when you're marketing to those that are more discerning, which the luxury marketplace is. They want to have the best. They want to be on top. As you said, they're also looking at sustainability. They're also wanting to be socially conscious. There's so many things that go into it nowadays. It is becoming more difficult to sort of be on top of it.
Oh, absolutely. But I think it's worth remembering that you can't be all things to everybody. That is absolutely crucial. And also, it's better to pick one little thing that you can do and do that extremely well and make a name for yourself doing that, rather than try to be everything. So, for example, the resale market. We talked recently about Valentino creating their own resale market called Valentino Vintage. And the plans that they've laid out, the technology, the process, it seems as if they've looked at other people who tried to do it and they've taken the best from that. And they're now going to try and roll that out themselves. So that is an example of a brand who has seen what other people are doing in the market, and they've tried to exert control, because many brands don't actually have control over the resale market of their own products. So they don't get to have that slice of the pie. But Valentino, they've come up with something. So that tells me that they've looked at other people, they've looked to the future, and they've realized that actually the future might be in the resale market, because it's not enough to buy luxury now. Yes, some people buy to keep, some people buy to flaunt, but also there are certain luxury categories that people are invested, deliberately invested in, so that it yields an investment in years to come. And over the pandemic, one of the behaviors that we noticed was around jewelry. So whereas maybe slightly prior to the pandemic, people were going for smaller pieces, more sustainable, et cetera, during the pandemic, they were asking for jewelry pieces with really large stones, with really large designs on the necklaces, single stone rings, et cetera, So that was what we were noticing around the pandemic when it came to behavior. So regardless of what people are saying, this is what personally I think. When people are at an uncertain time, they will always revert back to behaviors that are safe, behaviors that has kept us safe and alive. So that's what I think is kind of happening now, and will continue to happen until we come out completely, if we ever do, out of the pandemic. So that's just my thinking around that.
Well, you know, this show is going to be really interesting. It is entertaining to a certain degree. It's educational for sure. And I am really looking forward to learning a little bit more about luxury. I mean, I'm never going to be one that is sort of a consumer of luxury, because that's just not who I am. And my audience knows it, but I am really looking forward to learning a little bit more about it, because I guess sometimes when you're not interested in something, it takes someone or something special to make you want to learn about it. And that is what you've done for me.
Oh, thank you so much. That's one of the best compliments that we've ever received, because we literally just set out to create a show where we get regular information about what's happening in the luxury space. I ran a number of luxury rooms on Clubhouse. I spoke about marketing, branding, finance, processes, etc. But it just wasn't sustainable to do that every day, day in, day out. But when Simba came up with a brilliant idea of doing a weekly show, and the most important thing is we get to give our opinions. So it's not just about, it's just not a news of, oh, and here's the news, you know, this company bought this company. We want to know the psychology behind it. So if a CEO leaves a luxury brand, you know, unexpectedly, we can come in with the human aspects. You know, what happened? Was he pushed? Did he jump? Where is it going to? Recently, we had an announcement. I think a creative director of Bottega Veneta, he left. And we kind of know why he left, because there were, you know, word on the street, around behaviors, etc. However, yesterday, a new hire, an internal hire, was appointed. Yep. So for me, being an ex-headhunter, I know that if you appoint an internal candidate on a temporary basis, you better start thinking of the future, because if you don't give that candidate the job when the time comes, what's going to be the fallout? What's going to be the repercussions? Is your share price going to suffer? So those are some of the behind the scenes analysis and thinking that we like to bring in.
Yeah. And, you know, we love to bring it in a very, shall I put it, like, easy to understand way, because we're talking about complex things. Like we talk about scandals that have that surpass government sometimes, in the case of Volkswagen, for instance. And did you know they're basically a government-protected entity? Like, you can't sue them directly. That's why they kind of, but they own how many luxury car companies? Almost all of them. Yeah. People don't know that, right? People don't know that the real fun in the luxury game is at the parent company level. That's where the players are. And, you know, I love to rant about these things. like Elizabeth knows, I'll take something very serious and high impact, and I'll just rant about it like it's school drama, you know what I mean? But it's so fun to do, especially I love talking about my favorite brand in the world, Balenciaga. And for those who listen to that to the podcast, they'll know why I call it my favorite brand in the world. But yeah, so, you know, we keep it really informative, but really fun. And I think it's just because we are just talking about it as we see it. And we're not trying to sell it. We're not trying, you know, and I think that part makes it come out more conversational, where the listener feels like they're part of the conversation, not eavesdropping on someone else's conversation.
Yeah, well, I'm really looking forward to it. And it's going to be airing every Wednesday at 2000 EST. So that would be 1900 for you in London. And for you in Canada, that would be, I have no idea.
Neither do I, to be honest.
But you're 6 hours behind, aren't you? No. How many hours are you behind London?
Daylight saving time just happened. So it just, the whole world's off whack. I have no idea anymore.
I know. It's very confusing. And this whole turning the clocks back. For me this year, I have to say this year, and because everything that I have is electronic, I actually missed that whole, you know, I have to say, we hate the spring, the clock goes forward, because we feel that loss of an hour. In the fall, when you get that one extra hour on the weekend, on the Saturday night, you're like, oh.
That's nice. Nice.
But with electronic devices, you don't even know you've gotten that 1 hour. And I probably went 5 days without realizing that the time had changed, because everything had just automatically changed. So I never... Yeah. This is the first year that I actually do not have that satisfaction. It's like the last cookie satisfaction, right? I don't have it. Very disturbing.
That's funny.
Well, guys, I'm really excited about this. And it will be coming at you, the listener, every single week, as we said. And of course, we'll let you know 24 hours in advance, and it'll be up on YouTube, and it'll be on every single platform that we have. So you'll be able to subscribe and remind yourselves to tune in. And of course, it lives up there forever too. So if you're not there when it premieres, you can always check back. You know what, you guys, it has been an absolute pleasure as per usual. Thank you so much, Elizabeth.
Thank you so much, Rhea. Really appreciate you having us on your show today. Thank you.
And Simba, thank you so much from my home country in Canada. It's been a pleasure to host you.
Thank you for having us. And thank you for bringing Luxury News Weekly to your audience. You know, we're the number one source for luxury news on the internet. And we're just getting started.
That's right. Well, you know what? You heard it here first. And we have so much to look forward to. We're going to make sure to provide all of the links for both of these amazing people below this interview when it airs. If you want to follow them on LinkedIn, if you want to know about their products, their websites, etc., don't worry. It's all here. Thank you so much for joining us. And please do tune in. You've been watching another edition of Yacht Crew Vlogs right here on Yachting International Radio. My name is Rhea. I've been your host. We'll see you again next time.